Wizard of Whiskey presents Swig and Ramble, a podcast for the modern age. Come for the whiskey, stay for the shit show. Introducing Justin Curry at Wizard of Whiskey, Julia Men at the Wee Tipple. And now, pour yourself a drink and enjoy the show. I know I will.
Welcome back, Ramblers. Jesus Christ, Justin. I think this is how basically all of my intros happen. Justin says something ridiculous right before I'm supposed to say words, and then I just come out laughing, which is, you know, actually a pretty fun way to start a podcast. So that's awesome. Welcome back to your favorite ridiculously absurd, drinks-focused, hedonistic podcast, Swig and Ramble. We are here back for part two of the Farmstead Cider Story with Ian McGregor, co-founder, co-owner of Farmstead Cidery, located in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Sorry, I don't know why I said it like that. That was stupid.
Right. A lot of cider.
Yeah, just not enough, I don't think. We chatted with Ian last week. We learned a bit about their history, their awesome mission, and how they got started and how they helped save bears with their fucking cider. Like, that just blew my mind. So fucking awesome. And we realized there's just a whole lot more that we want to learn and chit chat about. So we brought Ian back. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time. We appreciate it.
For sure.
I have another cider from you guys for what's in my glass. So let's give a little chit chat about that. Why am I saying chit chat? What the fuck?
I don't know. It's just very weird.
It's quaint.
Very weird today.
Yeah. Well, you know, welcome to my life. I'm very excited. I had tried the Choke Cherry Cider last week, and it was fantastic. Super dry, super fabulous. But we're drinking the Teton Pet Nat Cider this week. So a little hazy. There's definitely sediment in the bottle that I can see. Ooh.
Love a good cinnamon crackers.
Yeah, this has got like this delightful, a little bit earthy, but also fruity kind of funk going on. And do you only use apples? Because I'm getting almost a pear sort of note on the nose on this one.
Yeah, it's all apples and they are related. But yeah.
Oh my God. If it's possible, I might like this even more than the Choke Cherry.
Nice.
Wow. I don't know exactly what it is. It's so harmonious. It's so easygoing, yet it's not boring. Like, it makes me sit up and want to dig into the glass and what all is going on in there. So I'm going to do just that.
Nice. Yeah, the Pet Nat. And I think that has a lot to do with the Pet Nat style. You know, it's just it's a snapshot of a fermentation, and you bottle it up when it's still fermenting, and you have what you have.
We talked last time about wine and cider and then the differences of like sweet ciders versus your cider and how yours is much more for a sophisticated wine drinker, which I absolutely agree with, except I typically do not like Pet Nat wines. I've found they're funky in a very off-putting way, and I think it's often a way for people to cover up mistakes in winemaking or faulty fruit or something like that, where this this does not remind me of a Pet Nat wine at all. This is pure and clean and absolutely delicious in its goodness.
Nice.
Interesting. I thought you would love Pet Nats, but that's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they have to be well done for me to like them when it comes to wine. And there have been a few, but most of them are just way too funky and like, no, that's a bad wine that you're trying to sell as something else. Let's see, what sours my mash this week? Hello, we're back. Surprise.
There's that Pet Nat surprise.
I feel like this does have a little bit more bubbly action than the Choke Cherry one, which I do not mind. I literally had a sours my mash 2 minutes ago, and I have since forgotten it. So that's great. Let's just, yeah, I don't know. I'm pissed that my back still hurts. Moving on, that's old news.
Wow, that was a great story.
It is.
Let's move on to
Please,
Ian
someone get
McGregor. I've
the wheel.
always wanted to
I
do that.
love. Hey.
So yeah.
I've got a good one. I got a good sours my mash.
Do
Please.
it.
We basically this year had we had a pretty gnarly frost out here, and it was on the solstice, which I think is the latest frost I've ever experienced as a gardener and apple grower. We've never had one so late as the solstice. The longest, supposedly most sunshine of the year came down with a deep frost. And unfortunately, it did hurt the apples a little bit. Some of the apples made it through. But since you guys have been drinking the choke cherry, we had a pretty much a zero choke cherry harvest this year, unfortunately. And so my mash is late frosts. They
No.
just come in and it seems like they get later and later, every year. And it's, I don't know if it's global cooling and warming all at once or what it is, but it's been happening in a way that has been more and more of a challenge when it comes to paying attention to wild fruits. And since the choke cherries are all growing wild around here, no one's farming them or growing them in a cultivated setting. We have to rely on what's out there. And then the double whammy of it is that the choke cherries are a big, big source of food for bears in the wild. But when the frosts knock out an entire crop, those bears have even fewer options for food before hibernation. And so this year we've been dealing with a low apple harvest, no choke cherry harvest, and tons of bears coming into town and like eating the tiny little bits of fruit that are around. So it's been a harvest of running around with very little yield. And so that's been a bit of a challenge. So, there's one.
Gotcha.
Well, what's in your
What's
plan?
in your glass at the moment?
I've got the Yellowstone cider right here. It's our I would say our most heavy hitting cider. It says 7.5 on the bottle, but we're allowed at 1.5% leeway on the labeling, and this one definitely creeps closer to 9%.
Iced.
And it's got a lot. It packs a serious punch, and I'd say that it's one of those ciders that once you've entered the world of dry ciders, and if you're interested in sour flavors, which a lot of our apples are sour here in this high altitude. This one really exhibits the terroir of this whole region because it's specifically using apples that you would only find around here.
Very
Cool.
fantastic. Myself, I am drinking, of course, the Farmstead. I'm drinking the choke cherry cider. I did not make a cocktail this time. I will ask many, many questions about choke cherries, like what they are and where do they come from and where can you get them. I have to say, I do very much appreciate this cider. It has what I would what, not Brettanomyces, but Brettanomyces, that sort of flavor profile of almost like a Flemish style beer, which I really enjoy on the nose when I'm expecting it. Brett and wine, as we all know, is horrible, but Brett and other things can be really fun. So it is dry. That it's funny because it has this really intense nose, and then it just soft, little bit of sour. There's a cow behind you. Yeah. Was that a dog or a cow? That's a cow? That's a dog.
That's a
It's
dog.
that's a dog. Okay.
okay. Well, it's a
Oh,
black and white patchy,
okay. I'm like,
adorable,
it looked like a cow from
scary
far
dog.
away.
Yeah,
All right.
he's one of those, shaggy short ones.
Gotcha. Okay. From the distance.
He's
Ah,
protecting
cute
us.
baby.
he's my he's my guardian right now. He's making sure no one creeps up on me.
That's
Very
fair.
nice.
That's fair. So I am amazing cider. I thoroughly enjoy this. It's really well made. What sours my mash? I was on the road to Sonoma the other day, and the drive should have taken 30 minutes, 45 to be honest, at the most, door to door. But because there was an Amazon truck that had stalled on the one lane highway,
Fuck off.
it took the time that I was supposed to get there. That was the entire time I was sitting in traffic. It was an hour in traffic. I'm the type of person I would rather be an hour early than a minute late.
Oh, yeah.
So I still made it well before my appointment time. But my point is, build more fucking roads.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
I understand we want to preserve things, and I wouldn't suggest this for places of natural beauty or things that are protected or parks or either make the car companies, this is going to be my, you're about to see a side of me here. Either you make the car companies build us more goddamn roads or you improve public transportation.
Oh,
Plain and
yes.
simple.
Fucking please.
When I go into the city, San Francisco is a city where I'm at. I take the ferry. It's the easiest thing to do, but it's still kind of expensive. I got spoiled in Chicago with public transportation. Never took my car anywhere unless I needed to go to the suburbs. Just walked 4 feet from my door to the train, and I went where I needed to go. The reason public transportation was not a big focus in the West was the advent of the car. And suddenly you had people saying, hey, instead of building public transportation, why don't you give us money and we'll build these car parks, now known as parking garages, and we'll put buildings around them, so people have a place to park. But there's never enough parking, obviously. If you took out all the parking garages in New York City, you'd gain like 700 acres, or seven was it 700,000 acres or something ridiculous like that. I need to double check that math because it's late in the afternoon math. But build more roads. If you're gonna have roads, if we're gonna be a car people, then you got to build more roads. I live in California, where the state is billed for like the road system maybe 8 million. There's
No.
41 million people here.
Yeah.
You didn't do enough roads, man.
Nope.
You didn't do enough bridges. Take the Chesapeake style bridge, which I used to love, going through in the East Coast, and do it in here in the Bay. Build three of those. Figure it out. Anyway, that's my
Two more
thing.
buses.
Or buses. There's
Yeah.
public transportation. Like there's a train, there's the BART system, there's the bus system, there's the ferry system. All of them need to be improved and at the same time cheaper.
Oh, yeah, 1,000,000%.
You know, it's $20 round trip to do the ferry here. From my house
Jesus.
to the ferry terminal in San Francisco,
Ugh.
$9 and something per trip. It should be like six per trip at the most. So maybe $12 total for round trip, and that's reasonable.
You know what? Let's cut it
Can you
down.
drink
Let's
on the
make it
ferry?
$10 round trip.
You can. $10 round trip is fine. You can drink on the ferry. There's snacks. There's coffee. There's a little bar there. They
All
should definitely up
outrageously
there,
priced, I'm sure.
improve their cider selection. They should
They
definitely
could.
do
I bet
that.
they could.
But anyway, build more goddamn roads in states where people need them, or improve the rail system. That's my
Yes.
sour to mash. Let's
Nice.
talk cider.
Yeah, that's way more interesting than
There's
transportation.
something we didn't talk about last episode. What is cider?
Cider, yeah. Cider, everyone thinks it's the sweet, cloudy apple juice beverage that you have in the fall with your donuts. And it is that. But the real meaning of cider is a fermented beverage. And it goes way back. It's a super old drink that had a really big showing here in the US. And I think it wasn't just Prohibition that knocked it out. There was a lot of other things that were happening, but Prohibition didn't help. And then, the idea that a lot of these trees are not very good to eat. A lot of the apples from these trees are not very tasty to eat, but they make a great cider. And so we lost a lot of that cool genetic diversity during the downfall of cider. And yeah, we're the one and only cidery in the state of Wyoming. And hoping that changes soon. I'd love to see more community here. It's cool to be a pioneer in some ways, and it's also kind of lonely in some ways. But ultimately, cider is making a comeback. People are starting to realize that there's lots of different ways to produce it and package it and consume it. And so I think cider's an exciting industry to be a part of. And I mentioned last episode that, working in the wine industry, I felt really constrained. And cider is such an open world. There's no, I mean, especially since we're the only cider makers around, for the most part, that there's not a lot of rules or expectations, and that's why we can make a funky cider that is in a wine bottle that ages for a long time, that's been barrel aged and things like that, because it feels like the whole industry is blossoming in a way that allows for creativity and for different approaches. And so that's why I really enjoy the industry and why I think cider as a beverage has a lot of potential to help out with all sorts of things, from lower alcohol consumption per bottle or can, all the way up to climate change and, certain areas that grow grapes or have a lot of, have a lot of issues with maybe weather or fire or smoke damage. Apples can really survive a wider range of habitats and environments. So kind of, I'm hopeful that cider will be able to fill some of the gaps as the climate changes and people are trying to figure out what they can grow in their region if they can't continue to grow what they've been growing. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you had been saying a lot of these apples aren't very pleasant to actually eat, and so that is why you turn them into cider. Now, I know a lot of people probably know the apples they see in the grocery stores, the Galas, the Granny Smiths, the Macintosh, the blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
What varieties of apples are you using? And you also had mentioned, I think last episode, a lot of these are trees that have been around for hundreds of years, so people aren't necessarily actively trying to grow them and cultivate them, but they've just been there since they were first planted and reseeded themselves. So what sort of varieties are you using, and what does that look like compared to like a regular apple you would get from the grocery store?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, we kind of found our niche with crab apples, and a crab apple is any apple that's smaller than 2 inches in diameter. And it's funny, even if you grow a Gala or a Granny Smith here, which it's challenging to do, but it can be done. The apples are much smaller than they are in the grocery store because we have a shorter growing season. They often have much higher sugars, much higher acidity, and much higher tannins as well, just based on where we're located. Even the same apple variety, one grown one place will be different from here. But crab apples are our main focus. There's a couple of varieties that are pretty predominant around here. We have one that has a great name called the Thunder Child. I don't know who named that apple, but it's a fantastic name. And it's like this tiny little dark purple fleshed apple that has really high sugars, like 22 Brix sugars. And
Wow.
that's like the level that you'd pick Pinot Noir at. Most apples that you see in the grocery store are at 12 to 14 Brix. And so we get these really flavor bomb apples growing around here. And that's why I think, when you were mentioning the Brett flavors that we get, there's definitely some opportunity with wild fermentation for those things to develop. But also, these apples have such a strong flavor profile just to start with that that's often where a lot of people think like, oh, you're souring your mash, like you're using a souring bacteria, to create the sour flavor. And I'm like, actually, no, this is just the nature of the chemistry of these apples that we use. We really love it because they produce a little higher octane cider, and since we go fully dry with everything, it gives it an opportunity to showcase the flavors and then let people pickle their tongues with some of the acidity that we're working with. And I'd say that cider really shines as a pairing in a way that, I mean, wine definitely is amazing with that, and beer as well, spirits as well. But cider is one of those great opportunities to pair with something unique. And I think that really rich dishes and barbecue and, things like that, cider is just a match made in heaven for that, to clean the palate and kind of get you to balance everything out about a meal.
Nice. I agree. I think cider is an amazing pairing opportunity. I think it is a great ingredient in cocktails. I think it also stands very, very well on its own. One of the things that we are working on as a project is discussing things like agritourism. And one of the principles of that, I believe, as a trained chef, is agritourism isn't just about a sense of place. It's also about knowing what food came from that wine region, that booze region. These things are intertwined often for thousands of years. There's a reason monks made very specific breads and cheeses to go with their very specific beers. There's a reason, and that's agritourism. In my warped view of the history of things, you can't discuss one without the other. You can't really talk about cider and I guess technically you can't talk about American history without talking about cider and things like Applejack. And I think Julie and I talked about this a few weeks ago. We were a apple nation for a long time. Became a sugar nation when it came to rum, and then eventually became a whiskey nation because the Brits turned off literally molasses tap. So, but we always had apples. We always were able to produce cider, and we forget that agritourism also talks about it, kind of focuses in on that. You mentioned fall. You mentioned that pressing, you know, that time of year where you're out there, you're pressing apples, you're making, you know, cider. It's the pumpkin patch time of year. People are out there. That to me, that all kind of goes together. It's a sense of year, right? I guess sense of time, maybe instead of sense of place. It's a sense of time. You know, you've arrived at autumn when you're out there and there's gallons and half gallons of freshly pressed cider for sale on the side of the road.
Yeah.
So, and that I think is what America thinks, without really realizing that it is a very finessed commodity, if that's the right way of putting it. You can buy a $60 bottle of cider. I don't know many people who do, but you can. It's an option. So cider does get this very odd. Has this very odd place in the spectrum of beverages. It's not brandy, it's not a spirit, it's not wine. What it is, you nailed it. It's fermented apple juice. And it can be quite incredible. So
And you know, that's actually one of the things that we are trying to get at in terms of like understanding, you know, we're using a lot of old apple tree, we're harvesting fruit from really old apple trees that were planted during the era when cider was kind of king in the country. But apples are so multifaceted, they provided all sorts of different options from a drink to food that you could preserve really well to wood that was nice quality wood to use for cooking and things like that. And then, you know, as we've been diving down this rabbit hole, I think it's cool that you mentioned, you know, the idea that the agritourism connection of a food and a beverage being made together. Now, it doesn't exactly compute, but, you know, since you guys are drinking the choke cherry, and choke cherries are really dear to my heart. That's my favorite cider that we make. And one of the reasons is because choke cherries were an extremely important food source for indigenous peoples from all around North America, but especially in this area. And it's super cool to be able to work with a fruit that grows wild that we can harvest, you know, assuming there's not a frost, pretty consistently. They are usually pretty hardy with frost too. It was just really poor timing. They're so late blooming, they bloomed on the solstice that they got frosted, and that's usually a great advantage to this fruit. But what's also amazing about choke cherries is their history as a not just as a food source, and you know, they don't have a history as a booze source until we came along. We're kind of, you know, we're putting our own spin on history there. But the
Nice.
choke cherry is also a really cool, important plant for tool making. A lot of, you know, archery equipment was made from choke cherries over the thousands of years. If you cut a big trunk of choke cherry, you could make a bow from that trunk, and then wherever you cut it, the next year it's going to grow a whole bunch of shoots, and it grows really straight shoots that will pop out from that cut wound, and you'll get, you know, a handful of arrows from each cut. And so it's this really cool sort of like cultural, you know, natural history connection that by making a cider with it, we're able to reintroduce people to this fruit that used to be such an important plant on the landscape for, you know, people before for thousands of years, but have ultimately been largely forgotten by the general public now. And so it's really fun. I get a real sense of satisfaction helping teach people about what a chokecherry is and teach them about the history of it and allow them to build a connection to a fruit that has sort of fallen off the radar. And chokecherries are they're actual cherries. They're tiny little super tannic, super dark fruit cherries that grow wild, and they're 90% pit. There's not a lot. There's the other, 10% is mostly skin, and they have a nice tannic structure that they can offer a cider. I think they, since we have a low or no chemical introduction of any kind through our process, it's nice to have high acidity apples and then and high tannin apples because tannins can be a preservative. And then this, the color that comes from the choke cherry, the tannins are great, and then the color is really amazing. And when you eat it, it's they call it choke cherry because you literally choke on it. That's how tannic and bitter it is. But when you ferment it, a lot of the fruit can come forward. You can actually smell and taste the fruity components in the fruit. So I think it really kind of opens it up into a flavor profile that more people can access than, say, eating that fresh fruit right off the tree.
Yeah, the when I had just the chokecherry cider itself, it didn't come off as tannic to me. It didn't have that grippy, intense bitterness to it. It was really just quite lovely and very lightly fruit forward.
Totally. Yeah, the tannins are kind of like a subtle undertone since we blend it with apples that are a little lower acidity to try and balance the tartness of it. Although it's, there's always plenty of tartness flying around here. I definitely like if we, so I've made a bunch of pure choke cherry wine over the years. It's super tannic and grippy, but when you blend it out, it's like a, a 25% to 75%, choke cherry to apple. And so the tannins are sort of there as I think of them as a preservative and as a little bit more of a structure, but not that grippy red wine tannin that you're used to. But I do think that it really, the fruit components can come through. The antioxidant, chemistry of the choke cherry can help with aging the cider and help it age better. And so it's sort of like subtle uses of these chemicals that are naturally occurring in the fruit to help make a cider that'll last a while, will change and be dynamic over the years, but also not be overpowering and yeah, too grippy on the gums.
So we have episodes often that are called article bitch fests. We find something that just it beyond sours our mash, so we decided to make it an entire episode. I think this is going to be one. I Googled choke cherries because now I'm curious, because I wouldn't mind planting one. I oddly have some random apple trees. When we bought our house, we didn't know what they were. No one said
Nice.
anything. They didn't say anything. We have three different apples, one different type of pear, and then we think what are quinces, quince.
Yeah, okay.
And we also found that we discovered during the summer that we have a peach tree as well, kind of growing off to the side under the shade of the apple tree. Again, we didn't notice.
Nice, yeah.
And we also have some other plums and some other random stuff that's kind of just randomly planted. Anyway, this article, this from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, says all choke cherry trees are toxic. But not all parts, not all the time, and not to all species. Apparently, choke cherry trees are cyanide-producing compounds. What the actual fuck?
Yeah, so in the last week's episode, you made a cocktail with amaretto, and I actually wanted to make a comment then about how appropriate that was because choke cherries are a stone fruit, and amaretto is derived from a, the flavor is almond, which is also a stone fruit. Peaches, people don't realize that almonds are peaches, and people also don't realize that stone fruit can all grow on the same tree. They're all very compatible, like botanically. And we find that the choke cherry often has like subtle notes of almond. And what that comes from is from being fermented on the pits, on the skins, but also on the pits. But that's where that cyanide production is happening. It's happening in the pits, just like apple seeds have those compounds. Same with almonds and all sorts of different fruits, seeds, I should say, because the almond is a seed ultimately. And so yeah, I don't know what that article was referring to exactly, but they're probably trying to caution people from eating the pits, which is actually a really old, ancient way to consume choke cherries, was to consume the fruit, but then you'd dry out the pits, and then you'd grind them into a meal, like a pulp, or not a pulp, like a flour, and then you could make all sorts of things with it. But if you didn't heat it up or, cook it, the cyanide compounds don't break down. If you do cook it, you'll break it down. So you can, there's all these different things, but we don't smash the pits. We don't grind the pits. We leave the pits whole, fermented on the pit, but in the same way, like we're doing punch down, same way you do all sorts of different red wines, and trying to extract the as much from the skins and the fruit that's there, and also from the pits that the flavors that they can offer. And I had a really amazing choke cherry infusion where they infused choke cherry into vodka, and
Oh.
it was strong, like really strong. Almond flavor. And I thought that was absolutely delicious. And it's one of those things where once you learn the botanical connections, you can kind of like put those all together. But I do know that our cider is not toxic. So that's the
Yes.
first thing.
Not gonna die. Sweet.
You should be all right unless you drink too much of it. And it wouldn't be the cyanide that's the problem in that situation.
Yep.
But yeah, it's, I think it's really cool to harness these fruits and then realize their connections, and then also, realize that if you process them in incorrect ways, they could be unsafe. Like if we ground up the pits and fermented it with that could definitely be lead to an unsafe situation. But
I'm glad you're educated enough to not poison your consumer base.
hey,
that's
that's what
because
I like that
you.
at a producer.
Yeah.
We hope we are. We keep screwing around with experiments though, so someday we're gonna mess it up. But I'll be the one that goes first.
Sweet.
Well, someone always has to go first. The people who found out about mushrooms.
Yeah.
Bye, Bob. Whoa, that don't eat that one. That took out Bob.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of cyanide, that reminds me of what my actual sours my mash was.
Uh-oh.
So I'm gonna go back at this point, probably like 25, 28 minutes. I was really pissed about all the toxic shit that companies are allowed to put into products that we consume or put into our bodies. I was specifically thinking about tampons and all of the incredibly awful and toxic, debilitating chemicals they put in them. And yet they are literally created to be shoved into a very delicate, thin membraned area, which then goes into the rest of your bloodstream and all of that. So we're gonna skip ahead, but that's what my actual sours my mash was. I'm very thankful to you, Ian, for talking about cyanide and brought us full circle.
Hey, thanks for educating us too, because I feel like we put so many things in our bodies, but not all of us put the same things in our bodies, and I'm really cognizant of what goes into me, but you never know where they're going to sneak a chemical in. So
Oh
that's
yeah.
helpful.
The answer is everywhere always. Yeah, and it's so
It's
frustrating.
sad, but
Sucks.
we don't eat food. I
Food eats us.
basically yes, that's exactly how I would put it. If you think about it, all of those chemicals do eat us. They change our bodies. This is why cancer rates have skyrocketed in the past 60 years. It's because we don't eat food anymore. If you go to
Oh yeah.
Costco, go anywhere. I mean, poor Julia, we couldn't find her food in Reno
Oh, that was a
to
struggle
eat.
fucking bus. Jesus.
She, I mean, I'll eat anything. I'm okay. But I've been looking at that more and more myself, wondering why. Because I was having this discussion, in fact, yesterday. We were talking about, because, oh, I was having dinner with two food scientists, both who hopefully will come on the podcast at some point. And we were discussing food science. And I'm not belittling anyone. I'm not trying to, diminish their contributions, but it's because of food science and large companies that have spent billions, probably trillions over the decades, getting us addicted to certain things. Cheetos, they were not caught, but it came out years ago that they were literally testing neurochemical reactions to different flavor profiles to
Fuck.
figure out how to addict people to a Cheeto, which is why you can't, the phrase once you pop, you can't stop is a literal chemical reaction. And so I have no
Yeah.
idea where I'm going with this or where how we got on this
I
subject.
derailed
Oh,
us all. So sorry.
food kills us. Yeah, I got you.
Cyanide.
But I looked at, and it says like the leaves, the bark, the stem, and the stone, which is the pit of a choke cherry, are all toxic. And I'm wondering, I'm like, okay, so maybe don't eat the tree. But now I want to, because I've read this, I'm going to fly out to Jackson Hole and maybe we make a little choke cherry whiskey.
Yeah.
Or brandy, I guess, technically it would be. Maybe we make a little brandy with some choke cherries, you know?
Yeah, they're high in sugar, so they have a high potential alcohol.
I know you have a still. It's okay. We all do.
Hiding. Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. So yeah. So we're gonna do that. I'm inviting myself over. Sorry.
Yeah, come on
Yay!
down.
So,
Party!
yep. I've never been to Wyoming. I
I haven't
think
since I was a child.
I drove near it once, and by that I mean I was in like Nebraska.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You're near. You probably got as close as you felt safe because, it's a pretty wild, it's still kind of a wild west place. I think it's one of the only states where the population is going down. And we only have 500,000 people, so it's already.
Is that all? I didn't realize there were any states with fewer than a million. I guess I get
We're the least populated state in the country
was
and
really. I
pretty
think I was
massive.
thinking of Montana. It has like what, 2 million or something?
Yeah, I
I was
don't
thinking
know.
of, okay.
Yeah, I would guess a lot more. And it's one of those places where you can still see someone with a gun on their hip, pretty much, that you can open carry anywhere. So
Yeah.
it's not uncommon. It's not the Wild West. It's not Colt 45s anymore. It's
Yeah. No,
still
it's
a,
Glocks. It's Glocks.
yeah.
It's funny. I grew up in inner city Memphis, Tennessee, and people, both categories of everyone carried guns in different
Yeah.
places. Some people you'd see it on the hips, some
Yeah.
people you'd see it, elsewhere, but you'd always see a gun. Somebody was carrying a gun somewhere.
All right.
So yeah,
Oh,
I get that.
America.
You can relate to that then. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Okay, so now we've talked about poisonous cider, sweet,
Yeah.
hashtag not poisoned. We have discussed guns, and oddly enough, I know now where not to, which tampons not to buy, which
Yeah.
is frankly good information.
I mean, hey, period panties are where it's fucking at, or just free bleed, or be on the pill, which is probably also atrocious for all the reasons.
What about the
Anyway,
cup?
being a woman is just awful for the most part.
That is what I understand now. Being
Yeah.
married, I understand that 100%.
Yes. Going
I
back to cider, though, circling back.
Yeah, well
So,
done. Good
yeah, you
segue.
had talked about you wild ferment your ciders, correct?
Yeah.
Obviously, the ones we have tried are dry. It sounds like you don't add any sugar. Had you also mentioned you don't add any chemicals, so like there are no sulfites? It sounds very fucking natural. It's like, do you also still hand press your cider?
Yeah, I mean, I just take all the apples and I just
With
squeeze
literally his bare
them.
hands. It's a good rage day. You
Yeah,
should open a
exactly.
rage
Two
room.
hands, get it going. Make sure you're holding it over a bucket and you're good to go.
Nice.
Yeah, we process a lot of our so we process all of the crab apples. Everything we harvest, we process ourselves, but we also do blend it with apples from orchard settings. So it's not all wild foraged. We find that, for like say for the pet nat. A percentage of it is what we pick, and then another percentage is what we'll get from orchards from either Montana or Idaho, and other, sources that are close by. We try to keep it in our region. And mainly when we source apples from other places, we try to find lower acidity apples to work with because we have such high acidity from what we harvest here. So it's sort of a way of balancing things out because it can be a bit intense. Or like the Yellowstone that I'm drinking right now, we put it in the bottle and let it age for a year and a half, and
Nice.
the acidity mellows a bit. And so from a cash flow perspective, like as we make cans, we make a couple different lines of cans, and then the rest are bottles. We like to try and blend that so that it's more balanced for a quicker consumption and less like aging. But yeah, we grind things up. We're actually, you said super fucking natural. Yes, that is exactly how I would describe our cider, is supernatural, in the sense that we'll pick fruit. We get tons of leaves in there. You get tons of sticks and branches, and we grind it all up. We'll pull out the big branches that are going to mess up our grinder, but like little twigs that are attached to a cluster of apples, like those go in. The leaves all go in with wild fermentation. When we first started, we were using champagne yeast, kind of like dipping our toe into it. Realized that that has a pretty neutral flavor, and I don't know, I like the way it fermented, but we started using wild yeast. And the reason was because champagne yeast would shut down as our cellar got colder and colder throughout the winter. The champagne yeast would die off when temperatures dipped below, 50 degrees. Our cellar would easily get to 40 degrees, and we were having to heat the cellar. And I just was experimenting with wild yeast. I had some friends encouraging us to use the spontaneous fermentation on some level. And so we noticed that those fermentations just kept rocking as the cellar got down to 40 degrees. And
Nice.
we're like, we don't have to heat this place. I like wearing a puffy coat while I'm working. So, like, why not? And it was cool. That was like the first step, realizing champagne yeast was shutting down in our environment, but the wild yeasts were powering through. And then we really embraced the funk. We don't mind, like all sorts of different potential flaws that are out there. We've been pretty happy with producing ciders that will have a wild fermentation that, if it gets too funky, we will distill it. But if it gets a little off the rails, we won't panic too much. And by using crab apples that have a higher acidity, we have a little more leeway with that because the chemistry is such that things don't spoil too much. Spoilage microbes don't have an opportunity to take hold as much. But at the same time, like, we don't want people to be drinking terrible drinks, but at the same time, we don't want them to be drinking chemicals. And so we've traded that off and said, hey, we'll take some funk and some unique flavor as a trade-off for putting any kind of chemicals in. And sulfites is like, the just the surface of what you could put in there. And I don't actually have a huge problem with sulfur in terms of the way I react to it. Some people claim to have much worse reactions than I do, but I just really like not being beholden to the chemical industry in any way. And so that's where our natural fermentation efforts have kind of come from. And so it's something where we're not beholden to labs for yeast, and we're not beholden to chemical companies for spoilage management. And instead, we're trying to harvest things that have a chemistry that will lend themselves to fermentation into aging. So high acidity apples and tannic apples and tannic choke cherries and things like that. So, the ethos is
Nice.
there.
Do you,
Very cool.
besides the choke cherries, do you use any other fruit besides apples?
Yeah, we've done tart cherry in the past, and that's just another fruit that was planted by homesteaders, and it can be pretty tart going with tart apples and tart cherries. We really like the way it's turned out a few times, but a few times like mousiness has taken over, and so we've just been like, all right, working with the cherries, although they're called tart cherries, their pH is not all that low, and so it's not able to protect against that as well. And so we've done it, and I think that we would like to continue doing it. I think instead of using chemicals, we'll use like pasteurization to pasteurize the cherry juice prior to fermentation. But that's, we stopped doing it because we couldn't consistently rely on the results. And then there's not a lot of fruit that grows around here, other than the ones I've mentioned. And so we haven't we're devoted to the apple. I'd say I'm an apple fan through and through. And then choke cherries have really come in because that is a representative flavor of our region. And I think there's abundance when there isn't a frost. And so that's been the natural choice. But we're not seeking out other fruits, and it would take a really long drive to bring fruits from different area to our cidery to ferment with. That said, we're never opposed to those types of co-fermentations. But there's definitely still a wild world of apples that we're exploring. So, and for the most part, I think we're going to keep trying to discover those red-fleshed apples and those tannic apples. And I'm promoting those in my orchard in the back. We've grafted a whole bunch of varieties that thrive in this area into my orchard to see how they do against the moose, which they are not winning the battle. They haven't died yet, though, either. It's a matter of just like trying to expand the variety of apples that we can grow in this area is a big part of our mission. So,
That's
well,
awesome.
I am glad that our sponsors for this episode are Dow Chemical and the makers of Glock.
They'll be excited.
They're gonna be great. I'm gonna tag them in these in our episodes for sure. Dow, I want your money. I almost said DuPont, but I don't think anybody would get that reference anymore.
Yeah, that was good. That was a good
Yeah,
choice.
a lot of people don't know DuPont made napalm. You're welcome. So anyway, Joy, do you have anything else? I feel like we could talk about this all day. I
Yeah.
kind of want Ian to enjoy what's his
That the
eventual
beautiful
sunset
looking
that's coming.
sunset that's going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. Fuck.
So
Never thought I'd want to move to Wyoming, but
right? I know that
fuck.
view is
Okay.
the view is fantastic.
Kind of a dramatic sky right now. Yeah,
Yeah.
maybe I'm gonna
Like
get rained on.
you won me over with it has a lot of wildlife. It's gorgeous just from your fucking backyard, and there are no people there. I'm one.
It's a trifecta.
Nice. That invite, by the way, goes both ways. So if I show up at your doorstep, you're more than welcome to show up at mine.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
Are
Joy
you
is
in
and Sandy's
Napa?
as well.
Yeah, we have a guest bedroom now. It's
Yeah.
delightful,
There
actually.
you go.
Are you in Napa? Are you guys, you said in the area?
I'm in Vallejo, so I'm 14
Oh,
minutes from from Napa. In
yeah.
fact, I often go. One of our favorite wineries that we partner with on some things has a vineyard right there in American Canyon. So it's like 10 minutes from me. And so we'll do outdoor vineyard events because they don't have a production facility. It's just vines.
Yeah,
And sitting in the
cool.
vines, having verticals, tasting all these great wines,
Nice.
without the tasting room atmosphere, without all the people going to picnic. Like, I get it. I'm not a consumer, and so I don't go to wineries to do that. I go
Yeah.
to interview someone, talk to people, and blitz through a tasting and take notes.
Hell yeah.
It's not the typical, let's spend a day at the vineyard and let's hang out or maybe see a concert.
Or let's ride our
Yeah.
bike in the 100-degree weather and
Yeah.
drink red wine at 20 different
Oh,
places until our
God. Let's
lips
not.
can't
That's no
close anymore.
thanks. Nope. That sounds awful. So, well, thank you very much, Ian McGregor, for coming on of
Absolutely. Thanks
Farmstead
for having me.
Cider. Where can people find you on the media? As you said, you don't snap, you don't chat, and you don't tweet. Do you X? Is that what people are calling it these days? Is
I
it
haven't X'd yet, but
Xing?
I'm not gonna say I never will, but I probably won't.
Okay.
I think Instagram's been the good place. Facebook that's there, and then our website, farmsteadyo.com, like Farmstead Wyoming. And then generally I'd say you can find us. My number's the number on the website. If you ever call it, you'll get me. It's a small operation, and
Awesome. Good to
we want
know.
to
Good
keep
to
it
know.
that way. It's one of those things where we pride ourselves in being small and having small ambitions. And so, come visit us in Wyoming.
Well, you heard him, everybody. Let's do this group trip. And he can show us all the touristy places as since we're gonna be tourists, the
Yeah.
non-touristy places and ruin it for everybody. So on that note, thank you everyone for joining us, for listening to Joya and I ramble after all these many years.
Oh yeah, thanks for sticking with us, the
Yeah.
two of you out there. I can't even count my mother among them anymore.
Both of you, thank you for listening. I think my mom doesn't even listen. She's like, "Where's this podcast? Can I download it on the thing on my Zoom or whatever?"
She's like, what time does it come on NPR?
Right,
Yeah.
exactly.
Oh God, if we were on NPR, that would be
Yeah.
amazing.
Awesome.
Fuck.
You'll get there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everybody. Cheers, and join us
Absolutely.
next time when we talk to those people who only buy Glocks.
There we go.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Download almost anywhere. Join our Facebook group and follow us at Swig and Ramble on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and Twitter for more fermented fuckery. Cheers.